This is TWiT, This Week in Tech, episode 39 for January 22nd, 2006.
This is TWiT, This Week in Tech. Episode 39. I don't care. I'm going full steam ahead. Episode 39, the Jack Benny episode for January 22nd, 2005. Welcome to This Week in Tech. It's a brand new show. What would that stand
for? It's tepid. It's tepid water. Which is the way the show started.
Isn't it 2006?
John C. Did I say 2005?
Yes.
I am such a loser. John C. Dvorak is here. Somebody told me you're the Howard Cosell of this show.
I got to tell you.
I never played the game.
You know, that wasn't even my Cosell voice. I can do a Cosell, but I'd have to think about it. So the reason that you're screwing up the beginning here is because of the stuff you're drinking. Why don't you tell people what it is?
Our new sponsor, Absolut Vodka. No, it's alkaline water.
Yeah. And you're getting dingier by the minute.
Dingy. Woo! It's good for you. Let me introduce David Prager is here.
Greetings.
From revision3.com.
At the moment. Yep. No, yeah, absolutely.
At the moment?
No.
Anything you want to tell
us? I was trying to be a little more
interesting. Standing in for Kevin Rose.
Yeah, Kevin is doing...
Or sitting in.
Where is he?
He's doing dig.com meetings because Jay Adelson's in town, and they've got a lot of dig stuff to do. They're digging around, apparently.
They've got to meet with the people. He's getting a lot of press. The Wall Street Journal did a story, big story. Yeah, does it count if it's the Wall Street Journal online? Is that the same as...
No.
Speaking of the Wall Street Journal... Greg Zachary is here, a former Wall Street Journal writer. He wrote some great books, including Showstopper, which I loved, about the Windows NT project. He's now with Business 2.0. Greg, it's good to have you on a...
Good evening.
On the TWiT panel.
Thank you for
Never
having
before
me.
Been a TWiT. Don't worry, it comes easy. Believe me. It's the TEP part that's going to be tough.
TEP, yeah. That's going to be tough.
Roger Chang from...
from nowhere.
From Jack Yard.
Oh, Backyard. Backyard. This is a freebie from a wrestling event I went to.
So the unemployed, Roger
Yes.
Chang. Representing the unemployed today.
Oh, really? You're out of work?
Yes.
Oh, so you were talking about this the other day. We're going to quit something you were doing.
Yes, and I did.
I was driving up here with Roger on the way here, and he gave me a really interesting reason for why he quit. I don't know if you were about to want to retell part of the reason why you quit, but I thought it was...
Because of poor management and bad work ethic?
Does that count?
What's the good story?
No, that was the story. I just wanted to know if you wanted to tell.
A statement of fact.
I just wanted to know. I don't know if you'd ever told about where you were and why you left, and if it was worthwhile telling or not.
Story is where you have an exposition. This is just a statement of fact.
I also thought I might be able to get a rant out of Roger because Roger rants well.
Yeah. I already did in the car. I'm out.
He's talked out.
Don't let him rant in the car. Save it for the show, don't you know?
And there's a certain someone who's pregnant, but I don't get it.
Okay, let's not start there. Coming up in just a little bit, we're going to talk about the plight of the independent ISP. Dane Jasper, our good friend and the president of the California Independent ISP Association, is here, CISPA, to talk about network issues. But let's do the top stories of the week before we get too much farther. You have an interesting story, John.
Well, this one here is, though, I've noticed it on our list, which, you know, should we tell the public that they can access our news list? Did you ever do that?
I don't think I have.
Oh.
It's on Delicious.
Yeah. It's Delicious, you know, the Delicious, D-E-L, whatever the heck it is, .us/TWiT.
This is the problem with Delicious. No one knows where to put the dots.
Well, you don't know how to spell, yeah. Well, it's, right. You have to play with it.
It's DEL.ICIO.us.
It's a case of being a little too clever.
/TWiT. And there's an RSS feed you can subscribe to.
Right. And
this
basically news stories that we'll be doing on a weekly basis.
Yeah. Some.
Some of them. We only do about, what, five?
No, we do more than that. Mm. There's actually a really neat news site. I sent you all invitations. Did you look at Newsvine? I sent you the...
I saw that. It's another thing. That's another wacky thing you've kind of dug up.
It's kind of a mixture of Dig... Delicious and Blogger.
Oh, Newsvine.
Newsvine.
Yeah.
Newsvine.
I've heard of it.
Yeah.
Is that any good?
It's not public yet. It's newsvine.com.
I just applied this morning, so I'm still waiting.
There's
a public
beta going on. I like it.
Here's what you used it? Have you used it?
Yeah.
Because I tried to get a beta. And
I sent you an invite. Didn't I?
Maybe you did.
I'll send you another one. I have.
Are we going to move from Delicious to that?
I don't. You know, Delicious is pretty basic. It's just Delicious.
It's just tags. Nothing there.
This has that, but you can also blog about your tags. And the idea, the theory behind it is they'll share the advertising revenue. So if you drove a lot of page views, you'd make some money on it.
Yeah, sure.
It's slick looking. Very slick looking. It's got some nice tools. I think it might do well. I mean, it's interesting. I mean, it just validates Kevin because it's really more of the same. It's really like a twisted dig.
Well, they say it's new and innovative because it's giving power to the
user.
The users are the ones making the editorial decisions, right. Is what it's saying.
Never heard
but then it's trying
like
to monetize
before.
It for, yeah.
How do you feel about that, Greg, as a mainstream journalist? Do you feel like that all these bloggers are just, you know, ripping you off? You're doing all the work and then they're linking to you?
No. I don't. I do think there's a little bit of the tail, the dog chasing the tail. So sooner or later, somebody has to come up with original material that's costly that a consumer is going to want. And as these mainstream media downsize and slim down and proprietize some of their stuff, they're going to find the bloggers that it's a tougher go and there'll be some shaking out.
Yeah, but you know, there's been some blogs that, or quasi-blogs or pseudo-blogs or whatever you want to call them, that have done kind of this already. Engadget comes to mind. They covered CES probably as well as any mainstream media.
So they made the turn. They made the transition from just linking.
And the thing is they have a clue about the online part. I mean, they're essentially taking the photographs and posting them instantly. So there was just there wasn't anybody, the old editorial model that you're talking, that we're used to, which is
filter.
You have a series and it's non-filtered, and there's a lot of the guys who are going to get burned by this change if it actually happens, and I think it will, are going to be those that layers and layers of management, editorial management that's in between the writer and the reader.
Well, I mean, that's what we do. We're a meta show. We take other people's stories and we talk about them, although I think we could also start doing some of that coverage ourselves too. I mean, that's not
you
so...
The way I see it, why do it until you have to?
This is how John covered CES.
From the living room. Yeah.
From the living room.
Well, but there's a great need for analysis, and I'd say that there's too narrow a band of opinion, so all the blogging generally is welcomed. But I just think it's a question of the economics of it.
Now, what about...
Somebody's got to pay for the actual news gathering.
Sooner or later, somebody's going to have to start actually paying for it.
But Engadget's loaded. I mean, Engadget's doing great. The AOL's footing the bill, and I'm sure they're making money.
But what about, do you worry about integrity of the stories where people might, consciously or unconsciously put a story into a particular slant?
Is there integrity in mainstream media?
No, I'm not saying, but I mean...
Actually, Greg's working on a paper for the Dvorak Uncensored blog. Dvorak.org/blog.
Wow, that was only 5 minutes into
this exact topic. I know, I had to get it in there, but on this exact topic. And why don't you just summarize?
Well, I've been teaching journalism for 7 years with John Markoff on technology
at Stanford
and at UC Berkeley. One thing about civic journalism that's great is it's giving all this opportunity, as John says, and you're saying, for people with initiative to shed new vantage points. The bad part is what we're finding is that people really do have serious axes to grind, and now in a very partisan way. I mean, even something like this Google not cooperating with the government, you're going to see a lot of cleavages right away, and it's going to be difficult to avoid many issues being shouting matches. And so I think people over time will come back to some neutral forms of journalism, but they're going to be much smaller.
We are in a polarized nation. I mean, we love those kind of polarizations. Yeah. And who doesn't love cleavage, frankly? That's one of the things we always need more of on screen.
I meant in the deconstructionist French way of
talking. Oh, cleavage.
Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry.
An intellectual term,
So tell us this story, John.
Here's the first story that we've been sitting on for a while, but this is the story that ran in InfoWorld and a few other places, and it's titled "The IBM Expert Warns of Short Lifespan for Burned CDs."
Did you all get this? I got this from 30 different people in the email. It's like, what about this? He says two and a half years,
2 years to 5 years max.
Boom.
For burned CDs.
Yeah,
is that counting from like a specific period, like CDRs created back in like 99 or
90. I have no idea what he's talking about.
I just installed an application I had on a CD that I've had for 6 years.
Yeah, I think this is bogus.
Are you talking about using CDs for archiving purposes? I think it's a terrible idea to archive stuff on burned
CDs. What are you going to archive it on? A hard drive?
I think it's pretty much been proven that like a CD that's pressed lasts longer than a CD that's burned.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's a fact.
It is a fact.
But so what?
If I have a bunch of stuff, like family heirloom type stuff that I want to keep. I'm not going to burn it on a CD. And I'm already. Here's what's really.
I recently
bought a damn Flickr account because I figured, you know what, I can upload all of my stuff there.
And Flickr will be around in 6 years.
But you know what? I trust that right now more than I would sticking a CD in a safe.
Oh.
No, I do.
Oh, brother. Listen, this guy, Gorecki.
Backed up by putting stuff on my hot.
Listen, Gorecki, the guy from IBM, he recommends that that people use magnetic tapes. I mean, come on here.
Oh, okay, I got a mag tape in the back. Right,
let's just do a little background on this. The first burnable CDs came out in 1988. I, coincidentally, managed to get a burner.
He also came out in 1988.
I got a burner in 1988. There's a joke there. I could have come back, and I'm thinking, what am I supposed to say to that?
Because you're the better man.
This is not
fair. You're drinking Pepsi. I'm drinking alkaline water. You're
Coke,
acid,
not Pepsi.
All right.
So anyway, so in 1988, these things came out, and I actually had a couple of the early burners. Olympus made one. They were all 1X. They were SCSI. They're very inconvenient, hard to use, and you had to find software. It's amazing. I still have those discs.
Yeah, they work.
1988.
And they work, right?
Yes.
Me too. I have
old
discs.
Go home and check, John.
Go
home and check.
Here's the deal. I just finished a column a couple of days ago because I got this new Plex store drive, DVD reader writer. And because I have a couple of really old discs, I like to check them and to see if they work on the new drive, because some of these new drives will not read some of these discs because, you know, the waggle track is screwed up. There's a million reasons. The waggle track It's a little track on the outside that the little head waggles around in, and it says, oh, okay, well, I should be reading.
It's kind of like one of those chihuahuas in the back of a car.
So, anyway, so I ran it. We're talking about discs from my OS2 era and all these old discs. These things are over 10 years old, which is twice as old as this guy claims they're going to last. They all read fine.
And
no problem.
They didn't know how to make good media. I mean, there were lots of issues with the early CDR media. Was it sealed properly?
Right.
It was oxidizing?
Cyanide poisoning.
So you're saying this guy's full of it?
Yeah, totally.
Are most of these CDs using the same kind of filament with a laser to...
There's two or three kinds. Now, the early ones were made...
Say phthalocyanine for me.
It's phthalo.
Because TDK has these, like, scratch-proof CDs. Yeah, yeah. Have you seen those TDK scratch-proof ones where you can scratch the crap out of them and they still go? And
That's just redundancy. They've got a lot of redundancy.
That's got nothing.
It's a lot of layers.
Better for archiving?
Scratch them radially. If you scratch them along the groove... Dead meat.
The other one is you can't scratch on the label side. Where the data really is.
That's reflective layer without no light. We did a whole thing.
Let him talk. This guy knows everything.
I'm done. I don't want to.
So do you have – get the new guy in. So anybody study this or anything? Because I always was skeptical about cheap media. We're talking even cheap discs seem to hold up. These guys are full of crap when they say 2 years.
This is where we could actually become journalists and do the actual lab research.
Nah.
Pretty much all the stuff I've burnt on were all those cheap ones you get at the computer show, like 100 on a spool, and they still work.
They're fine. I've only
had one disc, and that was a silverback blue dye, and that just kind of leaked. Like the dye leaked out of it, and that was the only time I've actually had a disc go bad.
In the early days, there was a problem with bad sealing of the polycarbonate layers, and you'd get moisture in there that the reflective layer would oxidize. People in Florida were saying, "Oh my God, there's rot."
About the stamped ones. I mean, the early stamped laser discs, which is where the word laser rot came from, were nothing but they all. Flopped.
They work.
There's a lot of them that don't.
Really?
The early
they rusted.
There were actually two.
Yeah, basically.
I think there were two.
See, that's why I drink alkaline water.
It probably oxidizes more.
Wasn't it Disney that wanted to do DVD rentals where once you open the seal, it oxidizes within 24, 48 hours?
But Lucky Eisner doesn't work there anymore.
You know, you can't worry about it. No, that was there. Fake solution.
It was a good one.
Nevertheless, this scared a lot of people, this story, and it was circulated widely.
He's in the mag tape business. Come on.
That's what gets me. He wants people to use mag tape.
Why don't we just go back to MO discs?
Why don't we just go back to Chad and use the paper tapes? Just have the thing grinding away.
Clay,
with chopping away.
Form.
You know, you never lose the data on a paper tape until the paper falls apart.
You know, I think probably the real issue is how long you're going to have a CD player to play back this data.
Absolutely. Yeah, the devices are going to not live as long as the storage medium themselves.
Well, you have to keep your stuff in a pile. And then when you get to the next technology, you have to take and recopy it into the new technology. And you have to keep doing that till you die.
But I think people do that. Like, I've done that with a bunch of stuff just to clear out space, like copy them over to DVD-Rs because, you know, it's five CDs that I don't have to stack on top of each other.
Your kids are going to go up in the attic. They're going to open this box. They're going to say, wow.
Porn.
Grandpa Roger had 30,000 silver discs. What do you do with
this? I'm going to do what my dad did. When my dad like had a bunch of old 8-track tapes, he actually put it along with the 8-track player. So I'm just going to shrink wrap a PC with, you know, a CD drive, monitor, keyboard, and mouse, and put it together as a package.
It'll be a CRT
It's just like the little wax cylinders, you know, from
Edison.
They include the little
– You can still get those. Yeah.
And the Viewmatics, you also include the
Viewmaster?
Yeah. Viewmasters. Yeah. Just do the same thing.
Yeah. Do you have your old Viewmasters?
Yes.
What little wheels do you have?
One was Mighty Mouse and the other one was See Hawaii, like a little vacation.
I knew you would have those.
Yeah, I would. Yeah.
He wears Mighty Mouse jammies.
Story two, and that's the big story. Google fights when AOL, MSN, and Yahoo cave.
But you know why Google fought?
Let's tell the story. First. Department of Justice lawyers wanting the search companies to do their research for them have gone and went to subpoenaed all the search companies. Here's the issue. They're trying to resurrect this lousy Child Online Protection Act, which was struck down 2 years ago by an appeals court. The appeals court said, look, this is a terrible law. You know, it's unconstitutional. The only way you can get this back on the books is if you guys prove there's no other way to fight child porn. So for 2 years, the Department of Justice has been laboring, trying to prove there's no other way to fight child porn. They subpoena records from all the search engine companies. The first story came out, Google says no. And then all of a sudden we find out, without a word, Yahoo, AOL, MSN all said, yeah, sure, whatever. Is this an issue?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, we got a president that's doing domestic spying. The NSA is spying on everything, emails, telephone calls. And I think Google has a brand to protect. Their value is in somewhat having transcended the fray, being a public trust. And they know that if they start stoking these conspiracy theories about what they're doing, who they're turning on.
They already have a problem because people, you know, there are people out there that anti-Google forces that have a grudge against Google for some reason. I think it's...
But is there really any threat? Isn't this just aggregate data? There's no personal information.
No, there is. It's the precedent because basically, while it's hard to believe that the NSA doesn't already either physically tap their servers or surveilling it in other ways, this is just a slippery slope. I mean, why doesn't then the police just sit back there with them full time then?
Right.
Why can't they just be there 24 hours a day? And if somebody makes a search, how to build an atomic bomb.
This might be a good time to bring Dane Jasper in.
And they just bring him in.
Dane Jasper has been running an independent ISP in Northern California for some time. Move the chair over, David. Make some room for Dane. And the reason is because you remember the FBI some years ago had a project called Carnivore. They renamed it to something more benign. But the idea was they put a box in every internet service provider in the nation, and it's watching all the traffic.
Yeah, it's basically a back end.
Dane, what happened to Carnivore? Is it around?
Well, I saw an early version. I saw Omnivore, which was pre-carnivore.
It ate everything.
It did, yeah. We had an experience in our business where we had some customers doing bad things, and the FBI came and said we'd like to deploy one of these devices. And the funny bit was it didn't work.
So you did deploy it.
Well, what we did, this is back in the days of dial-up, and configured the RADIUS servers to give each of these customers a random looking IP in a subnet. And then we routed those two subnets over a dedicated wire. And then we handed them that wire.
You segregated it.
We segregated
these
customers.
But did they have a court order?
They did.
Yeah. See, they had a court order. Now, that's very different.
Well, this is a subpoena. Yes. They're not a court order, but there's a subpoena involved.
Yeah, those are two different things. Okay. Those are two very different things. The court order is a specific investigation for a specific case.
It's like a wiretap.
This is on a specific subject. Right. This is blanket.
Fishing expedition, right.
Yeah. And there's a huge difference there. I was very impressed in working with the FBI, and this was in 1998. They had a computer crime squad, and they really knew what they were doing. Yeah. And they began these dialogues with, you know, we have a question about this. We'd like
they were
to,
very
we'd
specific.
Like a very narrow answer.
The thing here is that we're differentiating between there is a crime, I would assume, involved with this kind of thing. There's no crime involved with this Google.
It's a phishing expedition. They're saying, let's see how bad it is.
These guys are trying to get a law repassed. You know, I'm saying, why don't you just rewrite the law? Here's the Republicans. They got the president. They got the congressman. They got the senators. They got everything.
They ought to be able to pass.
Why don't they rewrite the law so it's constitutional and walk it through Congress
they
and
can't.
Pass it?
This is the second time.
Why? Because they don't know how to write laws?
Chirpa, chippa, coppa. They keep trying. They can't get a law because of the First Amendment.
Well, then they're doing something wrong. They should be what they're trying to do should be they should be able to write a law instead of trying to shoehorn this stuff with this bogus this invasion. I mean, this is like worse than a fishing expedition. This is a surveillance effort.
Here's the stinger: Wall Street hits Google hard. Their stock drops 8% as a result of fighting this.
Yeah, well, it's fear that the government's going to find some way.
This is a
this is a
Republican pro-business government, supposedly, and this company gets slammed because they're not going along with the program, which is not really it's not a criminal investigation whatsoever. It's just some thing that the Bush administration wants to do. I mean, and then they get hit by Wall Street. I mean, what kind of pro-business environment is this? Don't get me started on Sarbanes-Oxley.
We don't want to see your socks. What when it comes down to MSN, Yahoo, and AOL, what did they say to justify giving up the information? Why did they just say, yeah, sure, go ahead, and Google say no? I mean,
there were some lame quotes here and there.
Are they rethinking, saying, geez,
no,
maybe
they,
we, well,
they
oh, boy.
Blew it.
They did
blow it. Now.
Our stock could have fallen 8%.
Obviously, if you're a member of these organizations, right?
Here's the real question: is this a great opportunity to buy Google?
I was going to say
under $500. They hit, by the way, your target price a long time ago. You predicted $500.
Almost going to 12.
12?
That's going to do it. I'm just saying I'm almost going
to
do it.
By the way, I think the SEC would require us to say something about don't listen to us. Okay, so if
no,
it comes
actually,
to
I write for
stock,
MarketWatch, and I can.
Isn't there some sort of disclaimer you have to?
I don't own any stock in Google at the moment. I should
actually,
buy some.
I do. I should
do
say.
You? Well, that you do have to say.
I have stock in Google. I have 70 shares. It's not like I'm going to.
70 shares. It could be a lot. You mean, it could be a millionaire.
Well,
shortly.
I bought it. I was thinking.
It moves up slowly.
You know when I bought it?
Jump on. Worry about it.
I when I was looking at Google, and when the epiphany hit me. We've talked about this, but it was 6 months ago, 8 months ago, that this is not a search engine company; it's an advertising company. I suddenly got it. I got their business model, and I said, "These guys are going to make some money." But I think you're right, Greg. That's very incumbent on them to be almost above suspicion, to be the kind of the public trust, right? People are already scared of what Google knows.
Yeah, the telephone company had that status. AT&T had that status for many, many years, and Google seems to have inherited it, and they want to keep it.
So, Dane, there's no carnivore in – he runs a SonicNet, which is a great internet service provider.
I want to ask him this, too, because I've heard that since 9/11, most ISPs have installed some sort of carnivore-like device. Have you heard anything about this?
Does it come up at CISPA meetings?
No, and really, if that was the intent, there would be that would be in the national international backbones, and
they could do it so much easily.
That
way.
They really wouldn't push that to the edge.
That's
the place where we would see it. And yeah, I mean,
boy, now we're starting to sound like a
novel. There is echelon. The British.
They have conceded that
the British.
I heard that too.
But the U.S. has never.
They have meetings. This is like the Trilateral Commission. It's a beer drinking club.
do you find it hard to believe that the NSA is not supposed to, but let some government agency that is mandated to watch domestic.
How boring it would be. They don't do
this computerized.
It's all keywords.
Yeah,
they just say, okay, he said hummus. Watch for
Google
Osama.
It's like one of the things you're supposed to say is like, you're supposed to use code words. You're supposed to say, for example, if you're in the business of doing any security work at all, you say no such agency and Christians in action. Those are your
Christians
two.
In action.
Those are your two. That's the standard code words that you use, and they will not pick up on them. It's like,
oh,
I think they will now.
No, I don't think so.
They don't listen to Twit. Actually, you'd be surprised. I got an email today from a major at the in the Air Force who's in the Pentagon. He said, and I should get his permission. I won't say his name, but he said he's been telling all his buddies at the Pentagon. He says, we get lots of good inside information from listening to Twit. So.
That is so sad. It really is.
No, I think it's great.
So it's a desk jockey.
No, I mean, if they think they're getting any good information from us, they got a problem.
Patrick and I at one point were invited by the Secret Service to come to their convention in Florida. This was a few years ago, and talk to them about forensics. And I thought, wait a minute, we're two TV hosts. We don't know anything. We pretend to for television.
You know, I gave that talk actually.
Have you done that? Have you been down there? Yeah. They were actually very cool.
It wasn't there. It was, you know, for the FBI, and we're educating local agencies, the police department, the sheriff's department. And you know, the big question was, how long do you, as internet service providers, keep logs of who's been logging in, what their IP address was?
The answer is
how long do we make you keep that information? Well, you don't. You know, there's no law,
and that's why that's
our hard
drives. The guy company guy.
Remember? Can you edit that word there?
Company edit company.
You know, if you go to
he would erase his logs daily.
Well, I would too if my company were called it.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Yeah.
PUD.
Yeah, PUD.
If you go to Freaked Company, he has a.
I haven't seen that one.
It's the same thing.
I haven't been on that site for years.
He has a family-friendly version. Yeah, I can't remember what it is.
That site was just basically a
Frickin' Company.
It's a virtual water cooler for people.
I think it's lost its edge.
PUD was brilliant, though. You know, PUD's brilliance was, and he even admitted this. I just write something that maintains itself and kind of generates coin. And I can go do something else, and I keep doing these, and the money comes in.
It sounds like one of those get-rich-quick schemes.
It was a work of art.
It makes money by itself. You don't have to do anything. Put an ad in the newspaper.
It worked. It worked, Roger.
It's doable on the internet.
Very well.
It's a community.
Yeah.
Let everybody else create
them. So anyway, so they were shocked that you don't have to keep logs. How long do you keep your logs?
It varies depending upon the service, but I would guess I have a lot of exposure to internet service providers as I'm serving as the president of this California association. Most folks keep logs a month.
How come that long even?
And
why not forever?
Well, you want to know if somebody is sending spam from your network, if somebody's hacking from your network. But you'd be surprised.
If the RIAA sends you a letter, you want to be able to.
Why don't you just keep them forever? What difference does it make?
Storage.
Storage. I mean, how much storage is it going to take up?
You'd be surprised. I mean, we're talking about authentication logs.
Apparently I would.
Every time somebody logs in to check their email, which they might have configured their client to do once every minute or once every 5 minutes, we've got an authentication packet. And every time somebody logs in, logs out, we've allocated an IP.
ASCII.
There's a lot of logs.
I've been a customer of Dane's for a long time. And for a while, once
is that what you're down with?
I'm
just kidding.
No, he doesn't. He's not responsible for that part. In fact, I wish he were. Well, we had a $30,000 bill with SonicNet with Dane. He just saved our butt.
How did that happen?
Oh, you don't want to know. This was that thing when I moved the RSS feed off FeedBurner without thinking. I stuck it on my...
Oh, and you were actually doing these huge feeds?
No. The problem is with an RSS feed, I thought, they're small. They're 30K. Big deal. How much could that be? The problem is, first of all, it wasn't a server account. It was just an ISP server, the 10 megabytes they give you for free.
Right.
But the second problem was that all of these podcast clients, they don't just hit it once. They hit it every 5 minutes. So it's 30K every 5 minutes from a quarter of a million
people.
Right,
right, right. Yeah, that RSS stuff, it really...
I think there are a lot of people out there saying, is there a new podcast? Yeah. Is there a new podcast? They're on the edge of their seats in an automated fashion.
Yeah. Well, some people do it by hand.
Yeah, they don't even know, and then it shows up. But every 5 minutes... Oh, so you were just... So it just... Is that... Have you noticed it? Is this a real problem? Is this the Achilles heel of RSS?
Fortunately, Dane knows me, and we're friends.
I saw the revenue reports come through.
We made some money this month.
So I see Leo's account,
$30,000.
Yeah, actually his
holy mackerel.
You'd be surprised what we can clear to
personal account.
What we can clear to Leo's credit card.
Did it clear?
Yeah.
Oh, brother, you're buying.
I think we cleared 14 grand or something to Leo's credit card, and I see the revenue reports. The week I say, Leo Laporte, 14 grand. I look at the pending. He's got another. Another
50 grand back.
Another 15 or something. So I pick up the hammer, Leo.
This is 2 months. This only took 2 months. It was like 15 a month.
Holy. Yeah, so we just, you know, we just returned it and called Leo and said, Leo, what's up?
So, kids, just a word of warning.
Holy mackerel.
If you've got a little setting, and you do, and I should have paid attention, that's, you know, turns off the amount of the downloads after you hit the limit.
Yeah, we actually emailed you a warning.
Yeah, I didn't read my
email. He doesn't read his email, folks. Ladies and gentlemen, take a note.
You don't read my email either.
Read those email.
That's because you have these locked, you lock it with this
it's a digital signature. It's not locked.
There'll be a column coming up on this, ladies and gentlemen.
John can't read digital signatures.
The digital signature thing is a joke.
Wait a minute. All right.
Any of the rest of you guys have a problem with it?
No. I sent you email. I sent everybody email. So here's the deal.
Most of the time, yours doesn't even have the signature half the time.
This is PGP sign. It's PGP. I have it signed. That way, if you get it from me, you know that it came from me and nobody's modified it.
Right. And then I send them, say, I hit respond, and it comes up with a little note saying, oh, this person cannot receive anything that's not digitally signed.
Really?
Yeah. And then it says, click here.
What email program are you using?
Then it says click here.
It's that one that prevents spam.
I'm using Outlook Express like nobody in the world uses it.
It hasn't been updated since 1998, John.
I've been meaning to change it. I've been trying different things. I was testing software on it, so I got stuck on it.
Probably that's the number one email. I bet you that's the number one
email. I'm sure it is.
I use Eudora. Yeah.
I used to use Eudora, and then it blew up a couple of boxes. They never could figure out why, and I switched over to Mozilla, and then I had to test some software.
That's what I'm going
to next.
I like Thunderbird.
But the point is, it comes up with this little message, and it says, get your digital signature here. So I click on it,
Microsoft.
And it's a 404 error.
That's because you got old software, dude.
It's crap.
Now, are you using IMAP or are you using POP?
Using IMAP.
I'm very curious about, you know, people's desire for IMAP.
And I use IMAP.
I'm sorry to segue, but
it's a perfect segue.
Welcome to TWIT.
Yeah,
it's a good one.
You know, as an internet service provider, we hate podcasts. We hate IMAP. And I'm being completely frank.
You hate my IMAP because the amount of bandwidth it uses?
Hey, it was my service guy that told me to use IMAP.
IMAP is great, and everybody should use IMAP.
Can you explain to people out there who don't know what IMAP is compared to POP?
Normally, when you use a POP server,
stands for Post Office Protocol.
You go on the POP server, you download the mail, you clear it off of the ISP server, and
you download
it onto your server. And yeah, he says thank you. There's a problem with that, though. For people who have multiple machines like me, then I have to sync each machine. If I send a message, it's in my sent box on one machine but not on others. IMAP is more like Microsoft Exchange or any central server where the mail stays on the server, and I use my clients. And by the way, Outlook Express works fine. Outlook works.
And
Eudora
works.
You
can move it off there if you want to.
You can. You can copy it, but most of the time you leave it on there. And you can access it from anywhere. It's kind of like webmail.
But you can use a webmail client with it. I use Squirrel Mail, for example,
to go
to my IMAP account, and I can get my mail on anybody's computer.
Just so you feel better, Dane, I use a IMAP service called Fastmail. It's out of Australia. It's excellent.
Yeah, we've been looking at them.
They're wonderful.
And, you know, a lot of traditional internet service providers are not offering IMAP. And
constantly being pounded. Isn't that the reason?
And, you know, the idea is that you've got three different clients at three different locations. You leave the mail on the server because that's centrally accessible, and what I'm seeing is users are moving over to webmail because they're getting the same benefit of ubiquitous access, and I think it's time for ISPs probably have to stop resisting that and find a way to do IMAP in an economical way.
But Gmail, get a Gmail account, John.
This is fine. I got the greatest no spam guy in the world. I don't get any spam.
All right.
Okay.
But you don't get my mail either.
No, well,
you can't send it back.
Client. I get your
it's
mail.
It's the client. And actually, Outlook, occasionally, for some reason, Outlook will people will complain, oh, I got a blank message. And I don't.
Oh, and you know what happened with your stuff a little while ago? Although this stopped. Your message never came in. It always came in as an attachment. Even though it was like a hello, how you doing?
That's bad.
Yeah. That's what, are you using a Mac or something?
Yeah.
Is he sending HTML mail?
I don't know what he's doing.
Never. Yeah. I don't send HTML.
Whatever it is, it's like the digital.
All my mail's in Flash.
He's like, the reason he's got the digital signatures is because I know one day it was a pop-up, and he said, oh, I think that's a good idea, and he just clicks on everything.
You're like
a maniac.
I did it because I was being impersonated, and I wanted to make sure that when people got mail from me, they knew it was from me. So I tell, when people get... I get mail all the time. People said, hey, I saw you in the chat room, or I saw, you know, you commented on my blog, or you sent me an email. It's just somebody impersonating me, which is going to happen now.
This doesn't stop it?
No, but I tell people, and I'm telling you, if you get mail from me, it's not from me unless it's signed.
You won't get mail from them, folks,
anyway. That's true, too. So if you got mail from me, it wasn't from me anyway.
Right. Why don't you just make that statement?
Greg, what do you do? Do you use IMAP? Do you use POP?
He doesn't know what he's doing.
No.
What do you use, Greg? Hotmail.
He said he backed up his file.
I want to just harken back during that conversation to tell you what I use. I mean, when you were talking about are the DVDs or CD burns going to last, I'm thinking global warming. I mean, we just lost a city. I mean, New Orleans. I mean, we're thinking about are the CDs going to last?
Just keep them high.
So, yeah, keep
them
high.
So you think we're just, you think you're trivializing our concerns?
I didn't mean to be dismissive.
You're hurting my feelings.
Yeah, I was trying to put it into perspective. And I think for most people, the mail.
Your financial records on a CD, this is a big deal. The records of New Orleans could have been on a CD and it could have been destroyed by the hurricane.
And that would have helped if they were all backed up there. But
so you're saying until President Bush signs the Kyoto Accords, there's no point in putting my stuff on a CD?
No. Back to the mail. I think most people use the mail system of least resistance, least work for them.
Yes.
And it's surprising when you're superpower users like you guys are, beeping along in relative bliss, that most people are still caught up in a very, very low level of interaction with the computer.
I could never use Hotmail because it sounded like a sex thing. I just didn't.
It is.
Well, what do you think about Yahoo then? Is that worse?
Yahoo's a little better.
Okay,
people like that, but
better.
Gmail, they like that.
Look at the new Yahoo Mail.
That's what everyone says. Yeah.
Awesome.
It's supposed to be
it's
really.
They bought OddPost.
Yeah.
And it looks just like Outlook. It's incredible. Now, how do you feel about that kind of stuff, Dave? Because that is also very bandwidth intensive, isn't it?
It is, and you know, same sort of scenario, but you know, we think it's great, and actually, we tried to license OddPost, and they didn't. Yeah, you know, they got bought by Yahoo, and they stopped returning our calls.
Yeah. It beats Squirrel Mail. It beats all the other web-based mails. It's just really easy to use.
Let's get back to this RSS thing. You know, it's such a big deal.
$30,000.
I mean, I'm really kind of shocked.
By the way, somebody canceled his membership in Twit. He said, "I'm not giving you my $2 because I hate Dvorak." So
hey, well, you know, he's not listening, I guess, so I can't say anything about it.
I said, take your $2. Go away.
No, there are Dvorak haters out there. They tend to be old Macintosh hacks.
I don't care. You know what? You're the Howard Cosell of Twit, like I said. You're a lightning rod.
Telling it like it is.
That's right.
So
people hate you. They love you, but they always listen.
So we've got Leo impersonators.
Leo does a much better. I can't sound like crap from his Howard Cosell.
I wonder what they look like. Like a Leo impersonator.
Leo impersonator. It's probably a woman.
It could be the same guy that hates John.
So let's get back to this $30,000 RSS thing. Have you noticed this happening? I mean, because the RSS is very important to the blogging community, for example, and the podcasters.
Yeah. Anytime you create a mechanized process to repeatedly pull something, and it's a pull mechanism instead of a push mechanism, and it's mechanized, you're going to use a lot more bandwidth than you need.
My understanding is, and I I'm not coding RSS. You have done this. You have coded RSS.
By hand.
But my understanding is the mechanism, the way it works, is that you set the RSS feed up as an XML file, which has got data in it that tells the other side that comes in and looks at it because they've subscribed.
It parses it.
They've subscribed, and they say, okay, I'm supposed to go and hit this thing. I thought in the RSS feed itself, it would say, well, we're going to update once a week.
There's a time to live, which is generally ignored.
Oh.
So you.
Well, that doesn't help.
Yeah. Well, and by the way, this raises an issue with one of our stories. A lot of these people are not implementing RSS properly. Dave Weiner was very upset. Apple, you know, Apple's got this new photocasting feature part of the iPhoto where you can share your photos. It's called photocasting. What you'll do is you share a folder, and if another person is using iPhoto, and then you have to get the new iPhoto, you can subscribe to, you know, grandma can subscribe to your photos over the net. But Steve Jobs in his speech says, and it's industry standard RSS, so anybody with an RSS reader can also subscribe. Well, it turns out it's awful. It's abysmal. The RSS community is going crazy, and this is the problem is people implement RSS readers but pay no attention to the spec. And then
what is the spec, though? There's multiple specs. I think it was a 0.96 and a 0.98 and a 1.1 and a 1.0.
And there's Atom. I mean, yeah, there are issues with that as well. I agree. But there is at least specs for those. There's three good standards that people can follow, and they should follow.
And they do work.
They work very well. I mean, that's how podcasting works.
If it doesn't work that well if you're getting bills for $30,000 for doing nothing.
You know, I was stupid.
Personal account.
I was stupid. I put it in the wrong place. I didn't pay attention. I didn't, you know, and that was just a dumb thing to do. But it is an object lesson for people who want to create content. Bandwidth becomes a big deal. If we didn't have bandwidth for this from America Online, we couldn't afford to do this.
And I wonder,
even though that guy gave us $2.
That $2 guy, you know. Hey, I got $2.
Why do we
I'll give
still
you three.
Need ISPs? Why aren't there just, say, four or five bandwidth companies and that's it?
I hate to say, but we're getting there.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. But I mean, isn't that
in a good way.
That can't be good.
That's not a good thing.
That's aggregation.
Why isn't it a good thing?
Well, because these guys can all of a sudden.
That's like saying, why don't we just have one newspaper?
Here's why it's not a good thing, and it's already been hinted at by either the Comcast guys or the AT&T guys, one of the two, the guy, I forgot, Whitaker or whatever his name is. You know, he says, you know, I think it's a kind of crummy that these Google guys are making money off of our hard work. Right. I think we should maybe charge them or maybe take a piece of their action. It's like a gangster. I think we should, you know, Google's making billions. I think we should get.
That's what they did with the programmers. I mean, that's what Comcast and Malone did with television shows for so long. They went to them and said, hey, you don't give us 10% of your show, you're not on our cable network. Yep. Maybe that's what they're thinking.
And that's the problem with the independent.
He's saying when people are using Yahoo Mail, they're using our bandwidth for your rich media, and it's costing us because of all the – and the problem is, of course, this flat fee pricing.
Yeah.
Well, in the internet service paradigm, consumers are buying bandwidth. And in the telcos concept, they own a network, and people are paying for access into
it. Their
network. And they're used to being paid in both directions.
So I think
you know,
treating broadband as a cable network, right? And you're saying, how would we protect ISP's existence? Public policies or private policies would we promote then?
Well, and the FCC has talked about a set of standards where
FCC.
You know, we won't block traffic or we won't provide preferential routing.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, John's point is that you know
they
the phone companies, you know, Verizon joined SBC in saying, you know, why are these people having free carriage across our network? And from
it's
my
not
perspective,
free. They're paying $50 a month.
Well, the customer's paying $50 a month.
Yeah,
and.
Google should be paying.
The telco wants to double dip. You know, telco would like money from the content provider and the end user.
Greg raises a very interesting point because really there's two things an ISP does. They provide the connectivity. It's like plugging into the wall and you get electricity.
Right.
And they provide the service, whether, you know, email or what. Well, and that's the point is as more and more third parties like Yahoo and Google end up providing the services that traditionally ISPs have provided – what do we need an ISP for? Why can't we just plug into the utility?
That's been some of the problem.
It needs to be I don't want to say it, but it needs to be government-owned. Sorry.
What? You made me drop my alkaline water.
What? Socialize the backbone?
Greg, have you known John for a while? He's getting more and more left.
I'm a right winger.
I'm scared.
I'm just telling you.
He was the Michael Savage of computing for years. And all of a sudden, he's starting to sound like Bill Clinton.
That's the last thing I thought you'd say, but...
I think he's right.
It's an interesting notion.
Maybe not government, but
it's a utility. It should be a utility like a water company.
Well, those are regulated.
You should be able to plug into the wall and you get water. You go to a hotel room, you turn it on, you get water, you get free electricity in the hotel. You should have free
connectivity.
You know what Wi-Fi debacle
is? You know what the number one internet service provider is in this country? Linksys. Number two, Default.
You're right.
That's a gag that you might want to explain to the, you know. Yeah,
I don't have to explain it. I think it's.
Yeah. I get mine from Netgear.
What am I logged into here? Oh,
no,
Linksys.
You're logged into here, but are you on the Linksys one? Because that's like some guy across the street. You're poaching.
Meaning that's your modem.
But Dane, defend yourself. Why should there be ISPs?
Well, you know, internet service providers are certainly innovating and driving. They're driving the bandwidth to the household.
I am not complaining about guys like you. I think if there's all a bunch of little independents doing their job, I think that would be fantastic.
You're an
endangered species.
You know what? His business is better than ever.
That doesn't mean he's not an endangered species. The bigger he gets, the more likely AT&T will buy him out.
Well, that's not so.
There'll be just so much more money. You will not be able to resist the allure of a big check.
What kind of car did you drive down here today?
A Prius.
You used to have a fancy car. You still have the Linux license plate?
I do.
All right.
Waz has a Prius, too.
Everybody's got
I heard
a Prius.
That.
Yeah, and he's got a Hummer H1.
Yeah, but does he have Linux? Does he have the license plate Linux?
Sorry, I forgot that.
John and I drive Lexuses.
That's right.
A fine automobile, by the way.
But, I like them.
Well, is that a little blatant? I don't know.
But do you have a laser?
Well, one thing that's really troubling is that Wi-Fi didn't become free, open, many cities. And that seems to be a real market failure, that a clear service. I mean, it seems like we've gone backwards.
Well, Philadelphia is the best example because the big companies just fought against it.
Yeah, ganged up on it. They want to pass laws. And so it seems like there are examples with bandwidth where we're going backwards in the U.S.
We're numbers, what, 14, 15, 16? We're like down on the list. We're not even close in per capita.
Well, I mean, you have a point, John, in that you look at countries where the telephony system is entirely government-run. And in that environment, everybody had a phone line, and then the internet came along, and they wanted another one. And another phone line meant more capacity. And pushing over to DSL, where both are carried over one line, was the right thing to do for the costs of running that service. And the side effect is it's darn fast.
So yeah, well, they're using XDSL and some of these high-speed DSLs in most of the country. In Sweden, I can get 30 megabits per second.
So a lot of these countries got ahead of us because from an altruistic perspective, it was better and more cost-effective to deliver broadband and voice over the same
pair. And how's that different than our infrastructure?
Because here it's all about, is the consumer ready to pay for that?
Right. We're competing. Companies are tripping over themselves.
To rip off the consumer.
To get those number
of
people.
They pay less in South Korea. They pay less in Japan.
And they get more speed.
I don't understand. I think we're getting ripped off. China, it was just announced, their internet population hit 111 people online.
111 million.
111 people online. Yeah. All at the same internet cafe.
And all sensors.
I left out a few zeros.
Yeah.
111 million people online. That's the number two nation. And you can bet they don't have ISPs in China, or do they?
Yeah.
I mean, it's government run, and there's internet cafes. But 111 people being censored.
111 million.
111 million people being censored.
And that's another point. That's right.
Yeah. Oh, I don't
know. And I mean, if you think about it, 111 is very impressive, but you also have to think China has a population of 1+ billion.
Yeah.
And he's right about that. You know, I was in China for 3 weeks this summer. It's very clear the Chinese government has soured on the internet and is doing everything they can to slow penetration.
As they should. It's the internet is democratic.
Yeah, they can control it to a point. And so they love the cell phone. They are loading everything into that cell phone because they know that with the cell phone, its surveillance is much easier. There's just two carriers in China. And so, but it was surprising to me how much the brakes are put on the internet and how they're moving towards.
They'll pass us up anyway. Even with the brakes on, they're going to pass us up.
Oh, granted. Yeah. Yeah. I just think, though, that may distort them.
In the long run. Well, I think it's you do it at a price.
Of the net.
You do it at a price.
If it's used through the cell phone.
In the long run, the internet will be open there, too.
Has to be.
It has to be. It's just inevitable. It's like water.
What?
Alkaline water. Uh-oh. It penetrates. Do we want to move to another story? Did you see the brouhaha over Apple's Intel commercial? It's
insulting.
It's actually a ripoff of a record of a video by a company called a band called the Postal Service. It looks exactly the same. Now it's the same director, but Postal Service, the band, says we're upset. It's recently come to our attention that Apple Computer's new television commercial for the Intel chip features a shot-for-shot recreation of our video. By the way, their music is not so hot, but the video was very good.
They had that
made by the same filmmakers. You like?
Also, he's the same guy that it's a side project that he did with outside of Death.
Oh, it's Death Pepper Cutie.
Same. Yeah.
Oh, it's this this syntho pop crap.
Whatever.
I can't get into it.
What else you got to tell us, old timer?
Made by the same filmmakers responsible for the original. We did not approve this commercialization.
What else we got to talk about?
Come on. Apple should be really upset that director.
Here's what I think happened. Somebody at Apple, probably Steve, saw the video, said, hey, that's a great idea for an Intel. Hire the director. And Postal Service just miffed because, they didn't
get a chunk of change.
Yeah, exactly.
It should have been in the thing.
802.11.
N.
Is it just a number?
N.
Yeah. It's about time.
600 megabits.
Ooh.
And it's now on its way to approval. We're going to see it this year.
Seems to work.
No, not really.
Have you played with it at all?
Yeah. Yeah. It's a heck of a lot better than what we have.
I've been using the pre-N stuff for a while, and it works great.
So it is a multi-N.
It's MIMO.
That seems to be the key.
But 600 megabits?
Yeah.
Yeah. How many channels does
What are you going to connect it to?
Second?
So using one channel.
Yes, it's every channel? Second. Yeah. Every darn second.
Only one channel.
Whoa.
They invented this thing where you can send the same signal on one channel on top of each other, and it's like you know, reminds me a little bit of wave division multiplexing in the fiber, where, you know, they had so much capacity and somebody invented this other technology. Yeah, so, well,
more.
When it by, more. Then turned the half the country dark because you don't need all this fiber because it multiplied it by 16. This multiplies it by I don't know how many radios they can run at once, but I know they do three now.
What about interference with like
That's another? The point. They've got the interference thing busted. No problem.
So if you've been using a pre-N with the is it the Atheros chipset that's the good chipset?
It's the Ergo.
So if you've been using a pre-N with the Ergo, that's pretty much what you're going to see with the
Atheros. All of them are going to be using the same technology. But right now, Ergo, the ones that are out there, including the Belkin and some of these others, you can get those, and they're running at 240. And I think there's a 400.
So if we get this kind of bandwidth, then are we just going to get movies over? And all? I mean, what are we going to shove through these pipes?
Say we're going to get 600 megabits, which of course is optimal. It'll be probably more like 300. Who knows what?
What are we getting now?
You know what? You had your home network that everyone wants to like put all their media on one single storage and then serve it out.
Yeah, because you only need 10 megabits per second to run HD TV across the over the wire.
My ISPs, wow. I'd be lucky to get 6 megabits. What am I going to do with
300? No, I'm saying within the home, you can have this lash up, and then you can do some download and play off the internet for IPTV purposes, and then you can route it right to your television
set. Dane, SonicNet was very early into the wireless. I know you were doing wireless to downtown Santa Rosa. You're now wiring some of the communities in Northern California.
We've had an aggressive try-it-out wireless policy.
Will you move to N?
We haven't yet. We've certainly experimented with some N products.
How about WiMAX? Is that a better solution for it?
Well, right now, you know, there's been some certification changes in WiMAX recently in the 3.5 frequency, which is not available in the U.S. They're talking about 5.8 products that will be supported in the U.S. late this year. So we haven't seen anything except license frequency stuff in the WiMAX. But
that looks like I think that's going to be the way it's going to be.
Well, and I think that you know the challenge as the telecom companies and as the cable companies have woken up to the potential of the internet and sort of seized control, so to speak, of that last mile. Internet providers are really seeking to find other ways, and wireless is one of those potential outlets. So we've tried one technology after another, and found that many of them don't work. And you know, you're talking about the potential of Wi-Fi, and why isn't there wireless internet everywhere? And it ought to be free.
You'd have to have an enormous mesh. It's a real problem.
Well, and we've tried mesh products where we deploy equipment on a light pole on every city block, and it doesn't work very well.
Okay. So some of the problem is the technical.
Yeah. So we talk
barriers.
About Philadelphia and. You know, we talk about the technology that they're going to be using, and I haven't seen this stuff really work in a real city environment.
Have you played? You played with the pre-N stuff, though. What do you think of that?
We've played with the pre-N stuff, and it seems to me that
it gets more distance.
MIMO fixes a lot of the issues, and it isn't about getting 600 megabits when you're 3 feet away from the base station.
Right.
It's being half a block, 2 blocks away in a cafe behind a brick. You know, earthquake, seismically reinforced wall, and still getting 2 megabits, which today you're not getting with any technology.
Getting zero.
Yes.
Is there a solution now already?
Well, so the MIMO fixes a lot of that, and you know, takes advantages of the problems.
Or it's actually MIMO, I think.
MIMO.
But MIMO, you say MIMO, I say MIMO. The MIMO technology would be interesting if they made it, put it on top of WiMAX.
That's called MIMAX.
MIMAX. WiMAX. MIMAX. I don't know.
Who names this
It
stuff?
Just seems to me, I don't know, these names are...
WiMIMOMAX.
Well, it's an important point you raise, because I think there's been this growing sense that there's some conspiracy that's keeping Wi-Fi from public places.
You know,
but you're saying it's really a technical issue.
The technology is not mature
pesky.
For wide area, in my opinion, in our testing. And... You know, when you're talking about a cafe and you're putting a good access point in a cafe, backfed with a T1 or DSL circuit,
what kind of
great in the cafe.
What kind of power are we talking about? Because you can get, it seems to me, I mean, these are milliamp radios, generally speaking.
With high gain antennas, we're talking about a full watt of output.
So you're using a full watt with a big antenna.
Yeah. And the trouble there is
I got a little too much alkaline water.
That's very interesting.
The trouble with that then is in addition to an amplified output, you've got what you call a big ear. you're hearing a lot of noise in the environment. No. So your noise floor goes up in every microwave oven in three city blocks.
Now, one thing I've always wondered about is you have all these wireless products. I mean, aren't you just making like a huge EM cloud that someday is going to interfere
with? It's amazing that it works at all.
Yeah, yeah, I'm just
But it does.
I'm like someone's pacemaker just goes, you know, some guy's like, your broadband wireless access is responsible for giving my son a heart attack.
Well, we're talking about much lower power output than a walkie-talkie, much, much lower power output than a cell phone. You know, certainly a cell tower puts out a ton of power. And so the Wi-Fi standard says, you know, these power levels are very low, the antenna gain is very low. And so there are standards that are compared to some of the other sources of EMF. It's a really small number. Especially as you look at like high tension overhead lines at hundreds of thousands of
volts. Well, not only that, but now that I've noticed, this is another thing that kind of baffles me, but I've noticed there's been more and more products that are a power line distribution systems. In fact, Netgear just came out with one that supposedly is 85 megabits per second, and you plug it in the wall, and then you know your next door neighbor.
This internet over power line, but, something, you know, BIP or something.
BPL. The problem. Big issues with that. I mean, the hams are hating BPL
because it sends all kinds of radiation into through.
Well, it turns the grid into a big old transmitter, and so you have to notch it for the frequencies that you want to protect. And that's now we saw a demo at the FCC labs. I think you were with me, weren't you, David, when we went to the FCC labs?
I was working on Confro.
Okay. We saw a demo where they notch it and so forth. And you know, Michael Powell was a big fan of BPL, but I noticed that BPL has not really.
I think it's just a way to spy on the public.
Honestly, we do have to wire the rural areas. It's really an issue. It's becoming more and more of an issue. If you're in an urban area, you've got two or three good choices for high-speed internet. If you're in a rural area, you're lucky to get 19.2 dial-up.
Yeah, if you're lucky.
Yeah, and developing countries in Africa and elsewhere are looking at this internet on power lines because at least they have a national grid.
I'm convinced that the real reason for internet on power lines, why the technology continued to be developed, is because at some point in the future, all of our appliances, the refrigerator, the washing machine, will all be hooked up they'll all have IP addresses, and they'll be hooked through the power line, and then you'll have advertisements on your washing machine.
And you better not buy hummus, because they'll be at your door.
But you're right. That's been the great hope of the electricity companies and the kitchen of the future.
Our appliances will be talking to us, trying to sell us stuff, spying on us.
And it'll be all brought to you by Google. Google Refrigerator Sense. It's the newest product.
But think about it. Yeah, you can get a free refrigerator if you let it broadcast ads in your kitchen.
Probably.
Okay.
Yeah, there's a business.
A lot of people are
going to
take that.
Philip K. Dick was right. Remember he wrote that story about
free
ads
toaster
on every surface,
if it tells you a new ad each morning, every time you put in toast, it says.
They're going to be crappy toasters and refrigerators.
You never know.
We get some good stuff for free now.
I think that you're absolutely right, though, that that's been, you know, they've used the cover of conservation. They want to be able to shut off these things if you leave the house and forget to.
Yeah.
But you're right. You're right.
Why would the power company support a technology that allows you to use less power? I don't think so.
No, they could turn it on while you're
gone. They turn it on while you're gone.
The whole house is all lit up. Who left the lights on?
You don't understand. That's the security service. Oh, someone was outside, so we decided to turn on all the lights.
I do think, actually, that really what's going on with BPL is that the power companies are lobbying very hard to become internet service providers.
Because everyone wants
power. We've got copper, too.
Everyone wants money.
Sure. They want
The third conduit. It's the third conductor into the house.
Right.
You know, you've got your coax for your TV. You've got your traditional POTS voice. Yeah. And then you've got your power. And so it makes sense.
You also got the bug that the FBI planted.
It's not a big conduit.
But it's been very difficult. I remember I went to Kansas City 10 years ago, and they were talking about getting rid of the meter readers.
There's a lot of products. There's a lot of products like that.
But it just hasn't taken off.
A lot of places are
doing. No, there's a lot of places that do have the radio based. One more story, and then we got to leave, I bet.
Really?
Don't you think?
How long have we been going?
Too long.
Well, if you didn't go to the bathroom,
we've been gone so long that you went to the bathroom.
I mean, I think the show is nearly over.
Sick of us.
Yeah.
Digital music sales tripled in 2005, $1.1 billion, up from $380 million in 2004.
Huh. That's weird to me because it seemed to me that these guys said that that people only wanted to steal music online.
Well, now what they're saying is
buy it.
They're declaring victory.
Who's they?
The record industry.
No.
They're saying, well, look, because what happened was we've got 20,000, count them, 20,000 lawsuits out there now in 17 countries, and that has cast a chill on piracy, and... You know, that's the stick. We've got the carrot, which is iTunes Music Store, which is number one, but a number of other music stores. We've got a good way for people to safely buy music. Well, you know,
but
we did
overall,
it.
Sales are way down.
Did you hear about the kids at Amherst and University of Massachusetts? Story just broke before we started the show, which is they're suing. They got sued by the RIA for some $100,000+. So they're suing the P2P software guy.
They're blaming them. It's your fault, Grokster. You did it to me.
Some guy that was on.
I'm waiting for somebody to sue World Poker Tour because he was going to college, then he got hooked on poker, and now it's all over.
It can happen.
Dane, you must get regular letters from the RIAA.
You know, we don't.
You don't?
No, we don't. I was actually real surprised by that because I had expected that we'd begin to see those.
I've been told by some cable companies that, we get a letter. We then contact the customer and we say, we've been asked to tell you to shut down.
I was once contacted by Comcast in an error, it seemed to me. But, I think it's this area is more sophisticated.
Were you sued?
No, I was sent a letter saying you should explain why this happened. Of
what
course,
happened?
As you know, I can barely use email. So I was quite puzzled what could have happened. But maybe
my neighbor Linksys was doing
it. Maybe the Bay Area is so sophisticated.
They know how to hide better.
Yeah.
To clarify, what we're not seeing lawsuits and subpoenas. We are seeing a lot of DMCA notices. DMCA
you do get
downs.
Those.
We get
okay.
those constantly.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
And we have
all
a full-time employee who's just dealing
You're
with
kidding.
With that and
so what,
you know, squashing spam.
Give us an example of how that works.
Well, you have someone who's running a P2P application at home or a web server at home, and the IP address is ours, so we receive a notice.
What would he have on there that they would be objecting to? Is it Blogger? That's
movies?
No, movies.
Oh, movies.
Yeah, I mean.
Oh, geez, excuse me. I got to go.
I bet you do.
That's
where the $30,000 came from.
It's software, it's movies, it's music. And they're saying, take this off your servers. And the way that DMCA is written, it's not on our servers. We're a conduit. And we're not required to provide any information about the subscriber, and we can't take it down because it's not on our network. So we send a courtesy notice to the customer.
Okay.
There's some sniffing around happening
here.
They're watching. And maybe the next thing might be a subpoena.
Right.
But the response to the sender is, I'm sorry, we don't have any information on this.
So you haven't yet received a letter saying, we're gonna sue, we have a John Doe lawsuit or
No, we haven't seen that.
You haven't gotten any
We
of
haven't seen that.
If I were to put up, I've started
Who puts movies
copying movies. When I rent them, home use. Now, let's say I would turn around and offer that on a website. How quickly, how many hours or minutes or days would it take for them to
just
shut me down?
Just hypothetically.
It's like lightning.
Just hypothetically.
See 20,000 lawsuits. There are hundreds of millions of people. Well, it's like lightning striking.
My thing.
No, but what does he think? It's got to be more than that.
We had a customer on our network who had four enhanced DSL lines, 6 megabits each, which, we sell that circuit for $49.95 a month. They're running their business on this,
right.
And their function was to scour the web for copywritten content for their partners. And
to download to steal?
No, they're the police.
Oh,
so they are out there scouring the internet for people sharing this content. So the idea
is what content?
The movie that he just copied.
Yeah, say Lord of War. I just decide, hey, I'm gonna distribute Lord of War. How quickly will they shut me down?
Well, it depends on how widely it's distributed, if lots of people link to you, they're going to find you sooner. Okay. The more people are downloading,
and sooner
you, the more
would mean in days.
Send it to your mom. It seems unlikely.
I think it's so widespread. I think you're seeing, with 20,000 lawsuits,
then there's going
to
be a breaking point.
I like
then
the real numbers
in this country.
It's all guesswork.
I can tell you,
widespread.
We look at net flows. We look at protocols flowing across our network. And I can tell you that BitTorrent and Usenet NNTP are by far the two largest bandwidth pigs.
And guess what they're doing
really?
On the network. Groups.
And
guess
people are downloading movies from that.
I don't know what they're doing.
Shame on them.
Movies, porn, wares, and
Twit.
They're
on the list.
We're in a good,
this is
good
one of these paradoxes, because you see the legal business and the illegal business zooming. Because, yeah. I mean, DVD sales have just gone through the roof.
It hasn't hurt them.
Well, and, you know, they're downloading music from peer-to-peer. Yeah,
music
they're
is
downloading
crushed,
Usenet
though.
Stuff from
music
Usenet
is
binary.
You know, the thing is, DVDs, they've been smart enough to actually drop the prices. So, really,
they're cheap, and you get more.
It's cheaper to buy the thing rather than sit around for, like, half a month waiting for the rest of the movie.
Well, that's where the box office is.
But that's 6 megabit DSL.
The basement of the Capitol building in West Virginia, they discovered an entire piracy operation down there. $83,000 worth of computers purchased by the state of West Virginia.
Really?
Didn't they only have like 14 movies, though?
It was very small, but they were making a lot of copies.
Very scandalous.
Really?
Wow.
In the basement of the Capitol building.
They had 14 movies. They were just
cranking them out?
I can't vouch for that.
I got 23 on a hard disk.
You have it on good authority.
I can't vouch for the West Virginia $83,000 worth of computers. Was it really 14 movies?
It was a small quantity
amazing,
of movies.
Amazing. That were very popular.
And you know, we've seen this in universities.
Were they porn movies or first run movies or just
it was a state employee who had enough clout to requisition $83,000 worth of computers. Wow. And to get an office in the basement of the West Virginia Capitol building to do this.
Wow. This is a guy with some cojones,
that's the word.
Sounds like a hobby.
Wow, that's amazing.
All right, I think with that,
I think so too.
We should probably wrap this up. One more story, which I think is relevant to
Germany.
Us, is, pardon me? Go ahead.
Oh, no, there's that story about the German Wikipedia getting shut down because of the hacker's name getting revealed.
His last name, now that's ridiculous. His parents sued, the kid's dead.
He passed away.
Passed away would be the polite phrase.
Because of Wikipedia?
No.
Oh.
But Wikipedia, there was an article about him.
Because he was a hacker.
Revealed his last name. His parents were unhappy. They said, we don't want our son to be... Actually, they said like
why
this.
They just go
we don't want our
out.
Son to be remembered like this. So we will sue Wikipedia. By the way, in Germany, it's Wikipedia. And they actually, the German judge, temporary restraining.
Well, very different free speech rules
very
in Germany.
Yeah, you can't do comparison ads there either.
Really?
Yep.
You can't do?
No.
Wow. That's wrong.
We're the best.
We're number one.
Who is Colonel Klink here? This is.
We should mention that this show is listened to in 43 nations, many of them around the world.
I used to drive a German car.
So.
Used to drive.
Is it Twit?
Twit is how you say this. The last story was that Amazon is going to do its own TV show with Bill Maher.
Yeah.
Is
it going to be a tech show to compete with us?
As long as it's not a tech show, I don't care. Bill Maher can do anything he darn
What do you think of Bill Maher? Do you have an opinion on Bill Maher?
He used to be funny. He's not so funny
anymore. He's not as funny. He seems bitter.
That's what I was going to say. Bitter. He sounds someone who's bitter. You just look at his face and it's
I'd like to see Bill Maher and Dennis Miller in a cage match.
That'd be great.
Yes.
With John Daly doing the play-by-play.
All right.
Yeah. Now, John Daly, I love.
Yeah.
Bill Maher.
The guy you want to watch is John Stewart.
John Stewart's the king, isn't he?
Oh, yes.
How do real journalists feel about John Stewart?
They like him. I think Maher, the problem is that he's really genuinely angry about what's happening to this country. And so he's sort of been pushed from comedy to despair.
Right. Uh-huh.
Stewart is just a gifted comedian, very bright. He's got his biases, but he has a real intelligent critique of the media.
And
he's
funny. Yeah.
And that, you know, you can get away with a lot if you're
show,
funny.
Yeah. And he does it gently.
Well,
he's been working for so long trying to find himself that he's like, you know, he's at the top of his game. He should actually be on a network making.
Right.
He's making a mill.
Is that all?
Yeah.
Oh, that's sad.
Well, you know, here's...
There's local anchors making a mill.
Sad.
That's
wow. You know what?
That's not sad.
Wait a minute. So
wrong with you?
Even after five years, I wouldn't even make a quarter of that.
He should be making what Leno's making. He should be making
14 to 20.
My point precisely.
His opening monologue often has echoes of Carson. I mean, we're old enough to remember Johnny Carson. He was quite political. And during the years of
Stewart beats Leno.
No, Stewart's the best.
Letterman's lost it. He should be getting Letterman Leno money.
He said
he's getting Conan and Brunt money.
Yeah, well, that's because he's on cable.
Yeah.
You know, he probably has more downloads. You know, he gets a lot of stuff.
We used to be on cable.
We didn't make any money either.
We couldn't even stay on cable.
We suck. That's the problem with us.
So John Stewart has a bad agent then.
No, no, he's got it. That's good money for cable. Come on.
I don't know. I mean, it is look very at good Dave money Chappelle. They offered how much? He was on cable.
Well, I know, but that's Central. And that Chappelle money. That could be promotional. I've never been convinced that was a real deal. Maybe Stewart's making more. I just read it was $1 million. Huh. Maybe he's making 20. I don't think
John,
so.
Come on the show. Talk about it. We love you, babe.
And buy a pickup dinner.
Yeah, we need some.
Did you not like the Indian food we got?
The Indian food was okay.
He was
no. I just want more.
John was complaining because we had bready sandwiches, and so we got Indian food.
They feed
food
us.
For him.
John got all excited about my coffee, though.
Oh, did he bring coffee?
He brought one of these new autumn. It's a cup you can buy at Safeway or some other store, a good store, and you squeeze it and it heats up and it makes you a hot cup of coffee.
What'd that cost? What's that cost?
$2.69.
Unbelievable. Wolfgang Puck? That's what it is, a Wolfgang Puck thing.
You push the button on the
bottom.
You got to and bring over the Nokia thing, too. I want to see the Nokia thing.
Unbelievable.
He's got this
new... Are we out of time?
He'll be back.
No, we can edit it. So you buy this and you squeeze it and it heats up the...
Don't spill that on your computer.
It's Wolfgang Puck.
Now see the button on the
Wolfgang
bottom?
Wait.
This, it's just like Wolfgang. He's got a button on the bottom, too.
All the twits drink Wolfgang Puck instant espresso. Just push the button and the can is hot.
Does it work like those Insta Hot Packs
where
you,
nice.
You break that's in the two chemicals
yeah.
mix and
yeah,
get
so actually,
how hot?
Fill it.
Oh, how hot?
So it's one use only.
It's one use only. And what I find kind of striking about this is in third world countries, they don't have refrigeration.
Right.
And here we have coffee in a can. You flip it over, you push a button. 5 minutes later, you've got a coffee at 148 degrees.
Now,
holy.
Tastes great.
The next, what about a cooling one? The one that push the button and it turns into a cold.
But how does it know?
See, that's a lot more difficult.
It has to be different.
It's a thermostat
reaction. No, you know what? That's a chemical reaction.
We've got the room heated to 72. Inside the 72-degree room, we've got a refrigerator that keeps our coffee cool at 32 degrees so that we could take the can out of the refrigerator, press a button, and heat to 148 degrees. Now, that's technology.
Okay, here's
now, this is very cool. This is Nokia's – is this the i70? What do they call this?
I don't know what they call this.
It's an internet tablet.
Yeah.
But it's smaller than your typical tablet.
Yeah.
Is it what's it running on? OS?
Actually, it runs Linux.
It runs Linux.
Yeah. It does Wi-Fi, and it'll also sync up with your Bluetooth phone so that it will use your phone.
So this is not a phone at all?
No, it's not a phone. It's from Nokia, though.
It's just a web browser.
But you could pair it up with your cell phone that supports, you know, EVDO or GSM.
So it's like a mini tablet.
And that's what they want you to do.
You know, it's kind of funny because we browse the web on our little Blackberries and whatnot.
Sorry,
and it's just
I wanted to look
screen.
At it.
Right.
But aside from that, it's pretty
so
similar.
What's the
display? Well, here, show it to the audience.
No, go ahead.
No, it's okay.
I don't have. Yeah, phone. I'm not sure.
So you like it?
Well, I just got it today.
It's $400 or $500.
$350.
Can you watch Flash animations?
I have no idea. You know, it just showed up about 3 hours ago.
And it showed up.
Yeah, UPS showed up today.
You bought it.
This is brand new. They just started shipping these things. And I wanted to try it because we've got these Wi-Fi initiatives, and we're talking about Wi-Fi coverage.
Oh, okay. So
and
you've got a little speaker, too. It plays music.
And so the trouble is, I'm not carrying my laptop around
right.
when I'm in these downtown areas where we're deploying
right.
wireless networks.
Right.
And I want to know what's working and what isn't. Yeah. And so this seemed like a good way to test
great.
The Wi-Fi.
What happens if you drop it?
John,
it's a good question.
He's worked a little too long in the ZD Labs.
You can drop this. This is actually concrete.
That's amazing.
It is.
Well, the thing that activates it is QuickLime, which is what
component
makes
component of cement.
So now
you know how concrete
it
gets
hardened?
Hot. Who knows? I mean,
yeah,
you're not supposed to open it up, but in the bottom there
sounds
this,
like a nightmare
this is,
for the
this is exactly
companies.
What's wrong with America right now.
Oh,
I mean, look at that. Talk about waste landfill.
Oh,
holy moly.
Sure, it's got
sure
plastic.
Cool, though,
that would be illegal in Germany, that
coffee.
Thing.
Oh,
yeah.
You're
one
right.
time use cup of
oh,
coffee.
It's
got
a nightmare.
It's got
right.
every
so there's nothing in it now.
But if it's cement, if it's concrete, can't you recycle that? Just shred the outside and take it.
But if Wolfgang, if you want to advertise on the show,
yeah,
we'll take it all.
Can
back.
We take a bunch of these and build like an overpass?
Actually, the fact that we talked about it, we should have a few cases of these coming in.
Wow.
We'll take it.
You think about how much concrete we use in this society.
That's what this is. You save
there's
the cans
really
and you build buildings.
Here?
This is the next building material.
Not concrete
these
per se, but quick
cans.
Line, which is.
I think you might be right.
Yeah, it'd be great. You can make a can
Archaeologists
house.
Are going to find these.
Powered by OnTech. And is this the first time it's been used on the.
Yeah, on the Twitch show, yes.
I've never heard of it.
Well, they use something similar, but it's more like the hot packs where
you know they have to say, do not microwave,
because
some nitwit.
Right.
Because you say, well, now heat it up, you got to
microwave. But I'm not sure if it's the same
chemical. It's not used in the can, but maybe it's the same thing.
So it was pretty hot.
It was very hot.
And actually, the nice thing about this is you sleep in, you're in a rush, you're leaving the house, you have these in your glove box in your car. They keep forever.
Right? It's a little decadent.
Truly, we live in a Garden of Eden.
We do.
A garden of coffee.
So. Wait, we're a coffee society.
Look how much Starbucks is worth. I can get the TV dinner that automatically cooks when I peel it open.
I'm sure you can.
I'm sure they're going to come out with chili everything. And soup and who the heck
MREs.
Hey, we have to run. We want to thank our friends at AOL and the AOL podcasting channel on AOLmusic.com for providing the bandwidth for this show and, of course, for airing This Week in Tech. We really appreciate that. Of course, Bob Heil for our beautiful mics. I love my microphone. You like your microphone?
I still like to get one for the Skype
broadcast. Oh, we got to get one for you and use your M-Audio. Well, I'll talk to Bob about that. I really want to thank our special guests. It's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was a good show.
Yeah, it was great. Dane Jasper from Sonic.net.
Thank you.
A great internet service provider, and for I use them for years. I'm still a subscriber. And I owe you $30,000. David Prager.
Wow.
David Prager from Revision 3. Got a new system coming out soon?
Yep. A lot of new stuff. Oh, gosh. A lot of new stuff.
There's my alkaline water. John C. Dvorak. Dvorak.org/blog. You got a little thing
but
going.
It's not digitally signed.
Also, MarketWatch had a good column this week on Google and also PCMag.com.
And I really want to thank Greg Zachary for coming. Please come back.
Oh, you're welcome.
Really great to have you. Business 2.0, that's where we can find your stuff. What's the most recent book?
It's called The Diversity Advantage, Multicultural Identity in the New World Economy. And I've been writing a lot for the San Francisco Chronicle as well.
Great, right. All about mongrels. Speaking of mongrels, we want to thank Roger Chang.
Jeez, thanks.
Out of luck, out of time. Another twit is in the can.
Support for Twit is provided by the good folks at Golden Gate Studios. GoldenGateStudios.com. And by members of the Twit Army. If you haven't already enlisted, we invite you to visit thisweekintech.com. Your donation of $2 a month helps keep Twit on the air. We really appreciate your support. We'll see you next time on This Week in Tech.
So stand by so I can do a level check. This is Twit, This Week in Tech, episode 39 for January 22nd, 2006. I said 2005.
Hello, I'm speaking down the barrel. Welcome to WKRP Cincinnati.
No. Talk directly. Very directional, very directional.
Very directional.
Oh, and there's a cough button. Oh, crap! Does this one work?
You guys having a good time? Are you ready to do the show?
Yes, we're doing it right now. Ready? This is Twit, This Week in Tech, episode 39. Oh, wow. I've never been cut before.
This is on this show.
I've been cutting every other show. I'm drinking alkaline water, baby. pH 10. Ray Kurzweil, baby. I'm gonna live forever.
Microsoft poo-pooed it. They deny this. There's no problem. It's been on your system. You're dead. It's a fool's paradise.
This is amazing.
In tech.